StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. As you guys know, we attended Cures 2024, and in the aftermath of this interview, we would like to welcome Professor Robert Langer here with us, who, and I'll talk soon about you, but I did some research and you won more than 220 major awards. So, welcome to Startup Radio. Very happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your schedule has been a little bit tight at the event, so we're doing this in the after the real event remotely. I believe you're joining from Boston.
That's correct.
Yes. We are honored to have you here. You are officially Professor Robert Samuel Langer Jr., a renowned biotechnologist, chemical engineer, and inventor, who is distinguished institute professor at MIT. You are holding over 1,400 patents. That's crazy. You're the most cited engineer in history and have been instrumental in founding more than 40 biotech startups, including Moderna. You've done groundbreaking work in drug delivery systems and tissue engineering, and that has earned you more than 220 major awards, including the U.S. National Medal of Science and the Queen Elizabeth Prize for Engineering. This interview is, as I said, conducted in connection with Cures 2024 in July in Mainz, and we explore the insights in biotech startup and your pioneering contribution to modern medicine. But I have to admit, I'm not a doctor, so we will not go too deep into that. Given your extensive involvement in the biotech sector, how do you perceive the current landscape for biotech startups in Europe compared to the US? Are there specific strengths or challenges unique to each region?
Well, I think they're both. I think, you know, it may actually depend where you are in Europe. Obviously, Germany, you know, I mean, if you look at the mRNA area, two of the three main companies are in Germany, you know, which is our BioNTech and CureVac. You know, I think different countries have different cultures. You know, I think there's a lot of great stuff going on in both places. But, you know, for both areas, I mean, finding funding for biotech is, you know, can be difficult. Finding great business people can be difficult. I think different cultures have different appetites for risk taking, and I think that that's certainly important. But I think there's a lot of similarities in the U.S. and Europe. I think one of the other questions would be, you know, are there tax incentives that you know, government incentives that can help you know, people want to invest in companies, particularly in biotech companies. You know, I'm not 100% familiar with the different laws and tax issues in different countries in Europe. I don't know that they're all the same, though. So, I mean, just as an example, I remember when I was in Denmark, they said that if you had a car, they taxed it a regular car, a gas guzzling car. I think they taxed it at like 150%, you know, which, and the reason they do that is to try to discourage, you know, to help in things like climate change and so forth. I mean, so different countries, I don't know that that's true in necessarily other countries. I mean, you would know better. But I think that different countries can have different laws that can either incent or not incent, you know, general investments or biotech investments.
Well, I do believe we have more than 20 little laboratories here, all the countries in the European Union that try out their best to really do what's possible within this frame. And I do believe you just need to learn from the best. What advice would you give to European biotech startups looking to achieve the same level of success as those in the US? Are there key areas they should focus on or common pitfalls they should avoid?
Well, I think the main thing is to have great scientists, great science, great intellectual property, and great business people. That might sound superficial, but, you know, I've seen companies fail for any one of those reasons. So I think that you want to make sure that you have all those things. And I think you'd like to be fairly far along. In other words, you wouldn't want to just have an idea. You'd want to have reduced it to practice, you know, gotten some patents and publications and things like that.
Mm-hmm. As a co-founder of Moderna, what were the primary challenges you faced in the early stages of the company, and how did you overcome them?
Well, I think the challenges really that Moderna faced, and they're not atypical. I mean, every technology is different. I mean, I think the first thing that, well, there were several challenges. I think one was, you know, getting good animal data. Two, tied to that, was developing the right delivery systems. You know, three was getting the right business arrangements. So all those things, you know, were important. We were fortunate. We had very, very good people working at Moderna and still do. So I think that really was critical to solving those issues.
Moderna's mRNA technology has revolutionized vaccine development. How do you envision this technology evolving in the next decade, particularly for those diseases beyond COVID-19?
Yeah, well, you can already look at Moderna's pipeline. I'm sure you can look, by the way, at BioNTech's pipeline too. You know, I mean, but what we see are many other vaccines, you know, RSV vaccine, this is now Moderna, RSV vaccines, flu vaccines, combination vaccines. There may be vaccines for things like Epstein-Barr virus, many others. These are all public information. They're on the website. They're all in fairly advanced clinical trials. And then, of course, there are cancer vaccines, which I think, or individualized neoantigen therapies. And then there's different rare diseases. So I think there's so many different things that are coming about, and already there have been a number of approvals, and I expect we'll see a lot more.
With your significant experience in drug delivery systems, what advancements are you most excited about currently, and how might they impact the future medical treatment?
Well, we're doing a lot in our own laboratory. Some of it's aimed at new nanoparticles that can target cells, specific cells in the body. Some is aimed at trying to get through barriers, like could you ever take these drugs orally, or could you get them to the brain? So there are really a lot of different types of challenges that we've worked on: pulmonary delivery, vaginal delivery for women's health. We're doing a lot with the Gates Foundation for people in the developing world, where we could make what I'll call self-boosting vaccines, so you wouldn't have to go back for a second injection. We're also doing a lot on pills that you could swallow and maybe only have to do it once, because they would last a week or a month or longer.
You answered already a part of this question, but I didn't know your answers up front. So let me still ask a question. Maybe we can discover a new aspect here. What role do you believe governments and private sector partnerships should play in advancing biotech engineering innovation, especially in the context of startups?
Well, I think so. A couple things. First, the government. I mean, the government can do, of course, a lot of things. And the United States, we have the NIH, which is a great organization, and they not only do research themselves, they fund research at different academic places. We have the FDA that regulates these things and so forth. I think that what I would say is, from the NIH, we get the basic research being done that often leads to these companies. So I think that's very important. I think, though, one of the issues, of course, is it's one thing to make a discovery, which is wonderful, but then, of course, to make a product, it's very expensive. You know, so I think different kinds of tax laws, can play a big role. The United States sometimes is very concerned about pricing. Of course, that sometimes causes a problem. I mean, because, you know, investors who put the money in, they have a choice. Should they invest in the next Facebook or the next Moderna? You know, and when there's a lot of criticism about prices, well, it's pretty clear what they will do. And that's why I think, you know, there were very few places like, I mean, Moderna was the only one in the U.S. And like I say, there were two in Germany. So I think that the government can do many, many things, positive or negative, to influence the development of new medicines. Sometimes there's also agencies like ARPA-H or DARPA in the United States, which also can be very helpful in you know, young companies getting funding and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I see. Diversity is a crucial element in problem solving. Can you elaborate how diversity has played a role in your teams and research outcomes at MIT and within the companies you founded?
Yeah, well, I'd rather not have adversity, but on the other hand, it's hard to do research and not have it. I mean, to me, research, I mean, is a very exciting thing. But I think when I look at what I've certainly done career-wise, I've failed many, many more times than I've succeeded. I think when I've developed, for just to pick an example that's relevant, you know, 50 years ago, I was interested in developing tiny little delivery systems for large molecules, which would include DNA or RNA. And I failed hundreds of times. Finally, I succeeded. But of course, one success can wipe out a lot of failures. And, you know, it was funny. I think at one of these recent meetings, somebody, one of my former students, she apparently showed, had a cartoon of herself and had a quote from me about that I said something to the effect that really what's after she got a grant turned down, I said to her something like, well, it doesn't, you know, what's really important is not how you handle success. Anybody can do that. It's how you handle failure.
I like that one. The biotech industry has seen rapid growth during the pandemic. How do you foresee the industry's growth and evolution post-pandemic, especially particularly regarding startups?
Well, I'm still very optimistic. I think there'll be more and more startups. I mean, you know, I think that's happened the last 40 years, and I think we'll continue to see that. And in many areas, biotech and other areas as well. I think there's a tremendous amount of great science going on worldwide and a need, you know, to do better and better. So I expect that will continue to happen. You know, getting enough funding, that'll certainly be an issue. But I think that, you know, if the past is any predictor, you know, there'll be ups and downs. But I still believe overall the good that can come out of these new little companies is tremendous. So I think we'll see a lot more.
I think you've already answered the last question, because we would be looking at the future of Moderna, but you've already talked about the public pipeline. And I do understand you know a lot more, but there's a certain limit to what you could tell according to SEC rules and so on and so forth. So only thing left, we have something interesting for the last question, otherwise we can just cut it out.
Yeah, I know. No, that's okay. I mean, I think that, you know, there's public, the real thing coming up for Moderna, probably coming up for any type of biotech company, will be readout in clinical trials. You know, what will be the readout on the cancer trials? What will be the readout on other trials? I mean, that's, you know, so I think that will be, For any company, those readouts are important milestones. I mean, you know, I mean, so far, and I expect it will continue, the readouts have been terrific. Both BioNTech and Moderna got FDA approval for the COVID vaccine. Moderna got approval for the RSV vaccine. The data on the cancer trial so far has been excellent, but there's more to come. And also there's going to be more different kinds of cancer trials. So, and then there are many, many others in the pipeline. If somebody just looks, for example, at the Moderna website, and I'm sure that's true for other companies, you can pretty much figure out what the milestones will be. But the number one milestone is how well does it do for patients? You know, so far it's done very, very well for patients, you know, because of the COVID vaccine. And I think the others look quite promising as well.
I would, for the last question, I would be curious, because you have achieved already so much. What would you personally see as your next milestone, like 1,500 patents filed?
Well, I think at this stage of my life, I think to me, you know, we have a lot of things we're working on in the lab. I don't know that I think about it in terms of specific milestones, but I always feel happy whenever we get a scientific paper accepted. I feel happy when my students get, you know, really good jobs. I certainly feel good when the companies I've helped, get going, get good clinical data. I mean, all those things. I mean, I hope that I'm fortunate enough to continue to see these things happen.
How long do you want to do your research? Can you see yourself doing it for the next 5 or 10 years?
I can. I mean, again, I'll be 76 in a little over a month. But I always ask, how can I make the most impact, positive impact on the world? And you know, as long as my health is good, which so far it is, I'll try to keep going. I love what I do. It's been wonderful to be able to interact with great students and postdocs and colleagues. And, I hope that I'll be able to do a few more good things.
Well, only thing left for me to say is thank you very much for this great interview. And hopefully you get to do 20 more years great and impactful things.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope you're right. Thank you so much for thinking of me.
Totally my pleasure. Have a good day, Professor Lange.
And good luck to you and your family. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.